You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
6:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Happy Mardi Gras. Happy Fat Tuesday. Happy Puchki Day. Oh, it's
so
Tuesday
much.
That it feels like Monday, but it is, in fact, Tuesday. A lot of people had yesterday off. It was a company holiday.
Mm-hmm.
We had yesterday off. My wife did not. She felt very upset that she was forced to work on President's Day. I was like, hey, listen.
You don't get this cushy
tough
radio schedule.
No, I was, well, listen, I was shocked too, I'm sure. But Parker did a great job putting together the
yes
best of, so I hope you enjoyed yesterday's show. A few highlights from our long and illustrious run on this
very
program,
long,
which is
whole
now
month,
almost 2 months.
It is.
2 months.
6 weeks? We're like 6 weeks into this.
Well,
six
this is our 31st show today.
Oh,
31st
thank you. Wow.
Yep, we've got a counter
wow
just out there.
Wow,
the door
thank
there
you.
Yeah, there
thank
you,
go.
Is
Parker
that right?
30, yeah.
31 shows. 31 huh shows. They've kept huh us this long. All right.
Well, there's no accounting for taste. A lot to get to today, and there may be some surprises. That doesn't blow the surprise. That's not a spoiler. But this was real quick, because we're going to
yeah
get into talking about Tom Holman and Minneapolis and ICE and all that craziness. Breaking news overnight, Reverend Jesse Jackson, the civil rights activist, presidential candidate, Chicago icon, died at the age of 84 overnight tonight. He was known worldwide. He worked with Dr. Martin Luther King. He was on the balcony when Dr. King was mm-hmm assassinated. Hospitalized in mid-November, Jamie, with a rare brain condition.
Yeah.
Which is related to Parkinson's, which he was suffering from.
Yeah. And so this was a statement put out by his family almost immediately after he passed away. In we're going to assume the overnight hour, since this is breaking just this morning. Born in Greenville, South Carolina in 1941, he gained a lot of national attention, as you mentioned, for his work in civil rights. In 1966, at the age of 25, he returned to study at the Chicago Theological Seminary. He soon became a fixture on the religious and political scenes throughout most of Chicago, clashed with leaders, including former mayors Richard J. Daley and Jane, is it Byrne?
Byrne.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know my Chicago history quite as well as you do.
And maybe you get a little research in there. We know you love
should,
the research.
I should. And he often worked with local groups on education programs and anti-violence campaigns. Just one of those staples in the civil rights movement, and probably a name that a lot of people will obviously recognize, even if you haven't seen much of his work in the past few years, as he's gotten a little bit older.
Yeah. Ran for president in 84. He won 11 primaries in 1988
yeah
before Michael Dukakis ran over him with a tank. But that was, you know, and I will give, I've, you know, being from Chicago, Jesse Jackson was always a fixture on the news here. And when I was living in LA, I'll shout out some a radio bit, Jamie, because we know
yes
Frank loves it when we commit to the bit.
Yes.
For years, Jesse Jackson on Sunday morning would speak at Operation Push, and he would give these speeches. And a lot of times, if you've heard Jesse Jackson speak in the past, he gets rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, the words just all come together and in like a mush that would fall out. And these two guys, Conway and Steckler, on a talk station in Los Angeles, used to play a game on Monday, what did Jesse Jackson say? And so they would play clips from his speech from the day before, and people would have to try to translate what Jesse Jackson said. And it was hard sometimes
yes
to figure. It was like, none of those sounded like words, Jesse. But Jesse Jackson, a huge political force in this country, a huge fighter for
yeah
civil rights, had been sick for a while. And yeah, I think because they said he died Tuesday, so it was sometimes between
yeah
midnight and now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now, you know, that's horrible breaking news. We had more celebrity deaths while we were gone. But let's talk about our man Tom Holman.
He's
and his
the
ill-fitting
gift that
suits
keeps on giving.
Oh
for
my
sure
gosh! He says, Jimmy, there's still going to be, you know, we're pulling out of there.
Mm-hmm.
It's done here.
Yes.
Minneapolis is safe. There are no more undocumented immigrants there. The worst of the worst have been purged. Those five-year-olds who are just horrible, they have been taken into custody. Everything is good. But we're going to keep a small force here.
Well,
that's
sure.
The latest. We've got to keep a small security
force.
It's
what you have to do, obviously. But more than 1,000 people have already been removed, and hundreds more are expected before the operations are going to return to, quote-unquote, normal levels. Now, some ICE agents will stay in Minneapolis to finish some investigations, according to Homan, including cases tied to alleged daycare fraud and anti-ICE protest incidents. A small security team will remain to help with public safety and work with local law enforcement, but officials hope to withdraw them very soon as well. Now, looking ahead a little bit, Border Czar Tom Homan says that ICE could be deployed in other sanctuary cities as well. He also went on to say this weekend that decisions will depend on how much those cities cooperate with federal immigration enforcement, arguing for sending extra agents to sanctuary cities when needed. He also says cities could avoid the tension seen in Minneapolis just by working with federal agents.
Yeah, just let us do what we want.
Exactly.
And you won't have any trouble.
Exactly. He says that some leaders agree ICE should focus on serious criminals and public safety threats. No, you know.
Can I ask this, Jamie? And you might not know this through your extensive research. Does Tom Homan not have a map of the entire country?
I don't believe
because
he does.
There are cities, and I'm just going to throw. They could go to Houston.
Mm-hmm.
They could go to Tallahassee.
Yes.
They could go to a lot of other cities, but they seem to pick the same places. It's almost like there isn't a bigger country, or that undocumented, the worst of the worst, only pick certain cities to go to. That
you mean,
there's no worst of the worst anywhere else.
You mean cities, large cities, who primarily vote democratically, usually run by a Democratic governor. Is that what you're referring to, perhaps?
I don't need to make everything political, do I? Does everything have to be on
if this administration is going to make everything political and go along party lines?
No, that's exactly what I mean.
Point it out, too, right?
Come on, everybody knows. The immigration issue is not limited to sanctuary cities. This country needs definite reform of our immigration policies. Mm-hmm. This is not the way to get it, because you are not doing what you pretend to be doing and getting the worst of the worst. You are trying to get rid of anybody who doesn't look, sound, or have the birth certificate that says they are white Americans.
Does this feel, the language that they use feel a little, mob-like? You know, like if you don't do what we say, we're going to, you know, like that's what it feels like when
we're
going to
make you an offer you can't refuse, Mayor.
It's
either you bend down or you know, we're coming in.
And I don't say that lightly, but it's a tactic that we've seen from this administration over the course, during the first version and obviously during the first year of the second version as well. And so I don't say that lightly, but I mean, If you're going to threaten these governors and these mayors to cooperate just so that they don't bring ICE agents into your city, that feels like a tactic that starts to border on, I don't know, maybe a little.
It's a protection
it
racket.
It is.
It's exactly like the old school street level protection racket. You don't want anything to happen to your store, do you? Well, then I need $200 a week.
Right.
And we'll make sure everything's fine. You don't want us to invade your city with an army, basically.
Do what we say.
You do what we say.
Yeah.
And everything will be fine. That way, you don't want any problems here, do you?
Mm.
You don't want that. Look at what happened in Minneapolis. You don't want that here. Why don't you just do what we say? It'll be a lot easier for you.
Now, unfortunately, for a good portion of this country, we're not done with whatever ICE plans on doing, because there was news that broke over the weekend that ICE actually plans to expand detention capacity to about 92,600 beds nationwide to support these large-scale deportations. Now, this plan includes 8 mega detention centers, each able to hold up to 10,000 people, targeted to open by November 30th of 2026. Now, funding is expected through congressional spending in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, right? And so if you're watching what's happening at the government level, thinking, oh, they can't possibly continue this because DHS is shut down, as we've talked on this program, that is absolutely not true, because they have the funding from the One Big Beautiful Bill. Now, ICE also plans 16 regional processing sites for short stays, you know, those 3 to 7 days that can each hold up to 1,000 to 1,500 people. They aim right now to acquire 10 existing detention facilities already used by ICE. Now, the goal, according to officials...
Are they putting any phones in there so people can call lawyers?
Okay. I can't even imagine what... If you're holding 10,000 people in one facility, can you imagine what these facilities are going to be like? Now, the goal is to centralize and standardize detention operations nationwide. They've hired 12,000 new law enforcement officers to support these increased arrests. And the agency has already purchased at least 7 large warehouses, some over 1 million square feet, for possible detention use. Now, if you're keeping track, there are 23 proposed detention sites already under construction, Brian. And these projects fall into 4 categories. Some leases have already been signed. Some have been stalled by community pushback. Others are facing active opposition. And there are several that are still in the early planning stages, everywhere from Arizona, Mississippi, New Hampshire, New York, Texas, even Michigan, Oklahoma. The list goes on and on.
It's going to be interesting once these, if these projects continue, to find out where the money is going. This sounds like the privatization of prisons, where you get a couple companies that are making a lot of money. And I don't know for sure, but I will posit a thought that perhaps some of the money is going to friends of the administration. That there will be you've got to pay somebody these leases.
Yeah.
You've got somebody's making some money here, and but that's separate from the fact that we are now building warehouses for people. And we are not – the big thing over the weekend was Hillary Clinton coming out and saying, listen, we know, yes, President Obama, President Biden, they deported more people. And that's the big argument now for people who are still fans of what is happening with ICE. They deported more people. They did deport more people. They did it in a more civilized, humane way.
Yes.
As humane as you can be when you're deporting people, let's be honest. So, yes, that should be when you, as a MAGA person or a Republican supporter of these tactics, you should then realize that, okay, Democrats are not against fixing the immigration system. Democratic administrations deport people. They just don't do it in a random, cruel, arbitrary way where it's, you know, anybody who's standing outside of a Home Depot waiting to get work, they're not a criminal. The Obama administration, the Biden administration, weren't going and waiting in courthouses for people who were going to their hearings. These were people. You're not the worst of the worst if you're going to your immigration hearings.
Right. You're actually trying to do things legally, going through the process of staying in this country or getting your permanent documentation. Now, with these facilities that they're building across the country, it is interesting because in a lot of cases, federal officials are working to secure these sites kind of under wraps. And it's catching local leaders by surprise as well in many of the communities. They have no idea that this is happening. There's shell companies involved. There's different names. So it's going to be fascinating to see if the community pushback continues like it has on several of the sites already. It is 6:19 right now. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Inna. We'll talk a little punchki, and maybe we'll have Jamie eat something. It's the Civic Media Network.
It sounded nefarious.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
6:22 right now. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings. Thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. If you want to chime into the conversation today, 1-855-752-4842. That's 1-855-75-CIVIC. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Yeah, if you have a favorite punchki, because today is Fat Tuesday.
It
is Mardi Gras. It is punchki day. It is Fat Tuesday, like I said. I can't believe it. Today is the day where you can gorge yourself. Fat Tuesday started because it's the day before Lent. If you are a Catholic, it has big Catholic roots, Fat Tuesday. So today was the last day to enjoy yourself and eat all kinds of rich foods and things that you were giving up for Lent. And it would then the punschki became a big thing in Poland. Polish cities transformed, Warsaw, Krakow. All these bakeries would make these punschkis. They'd have big celebrations. And then it came to America, and Milwaukee, New York, Detroit, Chicago are huge Polish hubs. So, of course, the Polish tradition of Punschki Day carried over, and people line up there. I pre-ordered and picked mine up the other day, which I realized was too early because now, one, they were gone, and two, you know, it's you got to eat them when you get them. And if you're looking for some punschkis in Madison, the place to be, if you can get in there this morning, is the Ugly Apple Cafe, 215 South Hamilton Street, uglyapplecafe.com. Laurel Burleson is the owner of the cafe. She is here to talk to us about Madison's Punschki Day. Laurel, thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So how crazy is it going to be at the Ugly Apple Cafe this morning? Because I know you guys have been taking orders. People in Madison want their punschkis. How is it going to be for you?
I mean, it will be pretty crazy. We're located in a municipal building downtown. We're in the Dane County Courthouse. This is our third year doing it here, and so everybody is kind of aware. We take over the whole downstairs, and people come in with their pre-orders, and then we also have more for sale, and like breakfast and coffee and lunch and all that stuff too, and so it gets pretty wild, but I think we can handle it. We got it.
So, Laurel, how early do you guys have to start preparing for punschki season? And have the orders been rolling in for a while for the punschkis already?
Yeah. Like, we start kind of previewing them in the cafe in a couple weeks beforehand. So we've been kind of, like, previewing some flavors for people, like some of our regulars who can stop by. We started taking pre-orders, I think, like, the end of January.
Wow.
But people were emailing me before that, like, hey, are you doing pre-orders this year? Are you doing them? We need them. Yeah, starting like January 15th or 16th.
So, Laurel, for people who are like, well, isn't a punschki just like a jelly donut? What sets those apart, and what kind of unique flavors? Because you mentioned taste testing some flavors. What kind of unique flavors are you guys offering at the Ugly Apple Cafe?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's more like it's a very rich dough. So kind of going along with that tradition, like you were saying, in Poland, having something rich and delicious the day before, it's really trying to use up all the stuff that's in your house that you don't want hanging around over Lent. That was part of the tradition. So, like, there's butter in them. There's eggs and egg yolks. There's milk. There's sugar. They're, like, so rich. It's more like a deep-fried brioche bun almost than just, like, a regular plain old donut. And then I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. My mom is Polish. So when we moved up here, like, we had kind of a classic bakery that we would go to, and moving up here is like, there's not as much around for punschki in Madison. So I took it on myself when I opened my cafe about 10 years ago now.
Wow.
And some of the flavors we do, I try to do like things that are a little interesting and creative. We do probably the most popular is our bourbon vanilla bean custard.
Ooh. That sounds amazing.
It's really good. we also do a dark chocolate custard. And then the traditional ones are prune. And our little twist on that is I call them brandied dry plum. So I take the prunes and kind of stew them with apple cider and brandy and then make the filling from that. So it's like kind of like still a nod towards the traditional ones, but like a little bit different. And then the new flavor this year was lemon chamomile.
Ooh, that sounds delicious. Wow. We're talking with Laurel Burleson. She is the owner at Ugly Apple Cafe. It is Punschki Day as we get ready for Fat Tuesday and Mardi Gras. Now, you just listed a bunch of your favorite flavors, Laurel. Do you have a favorite, and why is it your favorite? And why should people try that one in particular?
Oh, my goodness. It's really hard to choose.
Loaded question.
So, yeah, it's like picking your favorite kid.
Right. Yeah. So you can't. They're all good in different ways, and it depends on what you like. One that I didn't mention yet, we do a caramel apple butter.
Ooh.
And I get all the apples from Seconds for apples from local farmers. That's like how we got the name of the business. Is yeah, it's like you can take the ugly apples and then make them into delicious things. And in this case, we took those and cooked them down into apple butter and then made caramel sauce, mixed that with it, and then put it inside a punschke.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, today's a day where diets go out the window.
Yeah.
I'm just listening to you describe all those, and I'm eyeing one that I have sitting next to me that I've been waiting to eat, and it's just like, tomorrow's Lent, and you just move on. So obviously today the focus is punschkes, but for those who haven't been to the courthouse because they're law-abiding citizens or not state employees, what else can people find at the Ugly Apple Cafe?
Yeah, so we're open Monday through Friday for breakfast and lunch. So breakfast sandwiches, sandwiches, soup, salads for lunch. We do daily specials, too, because a lot of our clientele are people who work in the building or nearby. So we switch it up all the time, use seasonal ingredients. Nice. We have a full espresso bar, so you can get your lattes or mochas also. And we also have a satellite location in the city county building, which is also where City Hall is downtown, and they have punschke there today, too.
Perfect. And you can find out all you need to know at uglyapplecafe.com. That's the website. Good luck today, Laurel. Thanks for taking time. I know you are busy this morning.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Have a wonderful day. It is 6:29 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Some Milwaukee council members are having a little tiffy tiff.
We'll talk about it coming up on Civic Media. 6:35 right now. We hope that you are having a great start to your morning. If you're listening in Appleton and Oshkosh on WISS or in Richland Center on WRCE or even in Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR, thank you so much for joining us on Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. I am Jamie Martinson.
I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. It seems like a lot of adults never went to kindergarten because in kindergarten, Jamie, you learn to cooperate. You learn to share. You learn to play together. You learn to different techniques for maybe overcoming differences.
Sure.
Or you hope to. And then we, those of us who went to kindergarten and tried to learn those things, a lot of times as you become adults, they fall away because, you know, adults are jerks. And that does not exclude members of the Common Council in Milwaukee. Two members of the Common Council have been removed from committees after a verbal confrontation in the lead up to a news conference about potential ICE enforcement operations in the city. Oh, boy. So if you can't play together, you can't be on committees.
Apparently
Everybody not. Go sit down.
You lose your positions. Council President Jose Perez had to reshuffle assignments, so Alders Mark Chambers Jr. and Joe Costa Zamarripa will no longer serve on the same committees, a move that's a bit unusual, as you can imagine, because committee changes typically happen after elections, and council seats aren't up again until 2028.
We can't have fighting in every meeting. We can't have these two going at each other like rabid raccoons. So they were yelling throughout the council offices. They're just running up and down the halls screaming at each other. That's not. I mean, even in a business like radio, where we're all very opinionated and we're all very outgoing for the most part, or curmudgeonly and don't like to be bothered.
Right.
You can't be running up and down the halls. Parker tried it the other day.
It didn't go well.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It just didn't go well. No.
I have to clean Brian's car after the show.
Yep. And I went four wheeling this weekend because everything was melting and muddy.
It was very muddy and melty. So the shakeup in Milwaukee actually strips Chambers of his seat on the very powerful licenses committee, which Zamarripa also chairs, and also removes him as vice chair of the Judiciary and Legislation Committee. Now, Zamarripa also lost her role as vice chair of the Community and Economic Development Committee, where Chambers serves. So obviously these two cannot just be together in any way, shape, or form.
No.
Now, there are sources inside the council that say changes came after this verbal altercation. It was on February 11th inside the council offices. Witnesses say Chambers could be heard yelling shortly before that news conference that you alluded to, where council members were preparing to talk about, you know, how the city could most be beneficial against potential ICE agents and ICE raids throughout Milwaukee. Now, the proposals include banning masks for law enforcement officers, preventing federal agents from staging operations on city property, ideas that surfaced after some of the recent immigration enforcement actions in Minnesota. Now, it's unclear, though, whether this confrontation was directly related to that particular proposal. Sources say, though, tensions between the two council members have been ongoing. Neither Chambers nor Zamarripa have publicly commented on the situation. Now, I find this fascinating, though, because Zamarripa is currently running for Wisconsin Secretary of State.
Oh,
yeah. So you got to think that maybe this changes things for potential voters.
If you can't get along with.
Right.
Listen, we all have coworkers that we don't like. If you're in the car driving to work this morning, you're like, I know that. It's Barb.
That Bob.
I hate Barb
down the hall.
Bob. They're all, oh my God, yes. I can't stand them. But you're not going to, you, as an adult, you realize you can't just be screaming and yelling. Now, I understand sometimes disagreements get heated.
Mm-hmm.
But this must have been, this can't be a one-time deal
to
have
like
this severe of repercussions. Because one time you can, voices get raised, you're in an mm-hmm. argument, okay, go, hey, guys, we can't,
right.
We got to simmer down a little bit.
Right.
But, yeah, this had to be going, and just to be running up and down the hall, screaming at each other. Oh, man. Yeah, if you're running for state office, voters could very well look at that and go, maybe that person is doesn't have their emotions under control.
Yeah, well, you know, it's worked for our current president, so maybe there will be no repercussions for Zamarripa in this as well.
The whole country is moving around like this.
It truly is. But you know, if you're a measured human being, right, you have to think that this does hurt public confidence, especially if you're running for some higher level office. You know, situations like this raise questions about professionalism. To me, it raises questions about leadership. And I don't know anything about either of these people. They might be fine people. They might not just get along. Obviously, in the day and age where we're constantly talking about ICE raids and potential invasions into cities, tempers are a little flared right now.
Yeah, and one community is affected differently than another community, and the representatives from those communities. Who knows?
Right.
Who knows? But let's, you know, try to don't model your behavior after the big administration. Model your behavior after your children, who you tell to try to get along with everybody.
Yes.
Or at least, hey, if you don't like them, don't go near them. That was always my thing with mom.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like them, stay away from them.
Right. My mom was...
But people don't. They love to go and they...
Yeah.
They want the conflict.
My mom was always like, just be nice to them and that's all you have to do. Just say hi and move on with your life. But I think this is... It's interesting because whether you're talking about a very... a large city like Milwaukee, a very urban area, or you're talking about even a smaller town like Hayward... Really, don't we just want our elected officials to put aside their differences and work together? I mean, maybe that sounds a little idealistic in
it
a time
does.
Where we are right now.
Pollyanna, very nice to meet you.
But constant infighting isn't going to help anybody. It doesn't move things along. It doesn't help progress. It just impedes. And I guess I just want people to be able to go in and do a job, and that's it.
That's not possible. I would imagine it's worse in a smaller town.
Probably.
Because you're
small town politics.
Yes, and you see each other all the time, and you wander by Culver's, and there's your arch enemy, your political nemesis, getting a some custard.
And yeah. And that's when you take out your camera, and just in case they do anything, you know, that you disagree with, just
that's
so you have it.
We saw Bob didn't tip. Why does Bob get all the shade here? Every argument, Bob is getting the shade, which I don't quite understand.
Yeah.
You mentioned masks, and I know we have something big we want to promote, but going back to Tom Holman.
Yes.
He also doesn't think ice people should ice people. Like it's something out of a movie. The ice people are coming.
The ice people are coming, yes.
From the north.
That's
yes,
right.
Yes, the ice agents. He doesn't believe they should wear masks.
No, he does not. And it was another one of those fascinating conversations from Holman over the weekend. He actually appeared on CBS's Face the Nation. And he said that he believes that masks are they're necessary to protect officers from threats and violence because these agents have to be able to protect themselves. Cut one, please, Parker.
How do you even calculate that high? We're just making up numbers. Bazillion infinity percent.
The math ain't mathin'. Yes, that's exactly.
Math
I love it.
Mathin'.
Oh my goodness. So,
how did law enforcement ever? My uncle was in back when it was called customs.
Yes,
he was a customs agent for his entire career. After the military, he was in customs. He never wore a mask. Nobody wore masks before this. How did we enforce laws up to this point?
Apparently, it was very, very difficult, and those numbers were up by 9 bazillion percent.
Nine bazillion.
That's right. It is very high.
It's concerning.
Now, he goes on in this interview to talk about how, you know, they already wear placards with their badge numbers and names on them. So this is how you identify these particular agents. And of course, he was talking about the partial government shutdown over Homeland Security funding, because that is what, in its third day now, fourth day. It's driven by the standoff between the White House and the Democrats over the immigration enforcement reforms. The debate has intensified following the shootings in Minneapolis, and Democrats are pushing for change that would require body cameras and visible identification. It would ban those masks, kind of like, you know, the argument that ensued, I guess, in Milwaukee in the council members. It would prohibit racial profiling and require judicial warrants for arrests on private property. Now, Holman's...
They do not want those judicial warrants.
They do not. They do not. Because without the warrants, it basically gives them free rein to go in and do whatever they want, wherever they want. So Holman called some of these proposals unreasonable, saying that ICE is operating within current federal law and rejecting claims of racial profiling. I guess take his word for it?
Well, he did say, you know, listen, it's the laws are on the books. So if you don't like the laws, then you should demonstrate it, Washington. And it's like, well, yeah, we could talk to our Congress people and demonstrate there, but we are also allowed to demonstrate on our own streets where you guys are doing all sorts of horrible things. Well, that's Minnesota, but what's the state of the state here in Wisconsin, Jamie? How will we find out what's happening here?
We're going to find out tonight because Governor Evers is going to take the podium at the Capitol around 7 p.m. And he is going to basically lay out his plans for 2026 as he enters his last 9 months of governor of this fine state of Wisconsin. We're going to have coverage right here on Civic Media tonight starting around 6:45. We have University of Wisconsin professors Michael Wagner and Howard Schwaber joining us, and our own John Scott will bring you insight, analysis, and we will talk a little bit about if we're going to be able to accomplish what Governor Evers lays out in this particular plan tonight. I've seen a few notes. I got to do a little bit more digging today into what the governor would like to basically tell Wisconsinites. Now, here's the thing you have to remember, folks. In 2 days, basically, Speaker Voss is going to adjourn this state legislature for the rest of the year. So... you got to think that we're going to hear some actual concrete plans tonight from our governor. And then we have a legislature that's effectively going to say, nope, we're not going to do any of that.
Yeah.
Which, how does that help anybody? Like, realistically, how does that help anybody in this state if the Republicans refuse to even talk about what the governor is going to lay out
tonight? It's amazing to me that that is allowed. There needs to be some mechanism in the state constitution that needs to be changed to say you can't be gone. You can't do everything in January and then not come back.
Right.
A lot can happen between mm-hmm. now and the end of the year, and it's irresponsible. And if it's a hardship on the legislators, well, that's something that
then
they need
run.
To think about before they run, because you know the gig. You don't take a job where you don't know when you're working.
Right.
So it seems very irresponsible. It seems like a dereliction of duty. It seems like you're letting down the people who voted for you and want to be represented. We don't just want to be represented in January.
No.
We want to be represented all year, and we want to have a say in what's happening.
That's why we go vote. But 6:45 tonight, join us for that State of the State coverage here on the Civic Media Network. It's 6:48 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We'll have a contest for you after 7 o'clock on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
It's 6:52 right now. We hope that you are having a great start to your morning. Another beautiful day shaping up in large portions of Wisconsin. A great start already this morning. Like, I went outside without a coat today. Like, I was just carrying it with me because it's already nice out. We live in Wisconsin. Our version of nice is a lot different than other parts of the country.
we're getting lulled into this fake spring. And I think by the weekend, it's supposed to be back in the 30s.
But it is.
You know what? Okay, I'll take a couple days
reprieve.
Like this, even though I know the cold will feel worse next week, but I don't mind a day or two where it's like,
we needed a break from like the 20s and below, though, didn't we? We went through a long stretch of very, very cold temperatures, so I'll take it. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Here's a question for you. How did so many people look at Donald Trump when he was running and didn't see anything that was morally disqualifying for him? And I thought this question came up because I saw a video from New York Times opinion columnist David Brooks, who sat down for one of his final conversations. He's leaving the New York Times. And I mean, we've all wondered that, right? We've all thought, why is there no breaking point? What is it that, why do people look at Donald Trump and not see anything wrong? The 34 felony convictions. There's so many things, and they try to brush away everything. There's nothing, there's no bar that's too low for them to elect it. And he had a very interesting, take on it, and I wanted to play for you, Jamie, and we can talk about it. And I want to hear from you, too, at 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. This is David Brooks from the New York Times. Cut two, please.
You know,
And what I liked about this is, if you listen, he's not talking about Donald Trump being the cause of this.
Right.
Donald Trump is the result of this.
Yeah.
Which I found very interesting, because then it takes some of the ammunition and the Trump derangement syndrome out of the conversation and makes us look inward more to say, is he right? Is there no shared moral fabric anymore?
I think it's interesting because, you know, he mentions 50 years, mm-hmm. and he's not wrong, because for decades, the religious right talked about this moral leadership. And if you go even back to the 1980s, right, there were these several movements like the moral majority. I was too young to remember it, but I've studied it plenty. And it helped turn faith into this really powerful political force. And leaders were expected to model these family values and have personal character. But somewhere along the way, those rules actually shifted. And so I think today, for a lot of voters, especially the evangelicals, politics has become more about outcomes than personal behavior. The focus then becomes shifts to judges, policies, and these cultural battles. And the thinking essentially is we're electing a president, not a pastor. And in fact, there was a recent survey that really kind of drove this home for me a little bit. In this survey, nearly half of the Republicans said that they would still support Trump, even if he were proven to be connected to Jeffrey Epstein's crimes and convicted of crimes, right? So if you think about that for a second, that means millions of people walking amongst us, right, are okay with a scandal serious enough that it would land people in jail for the rest of their lives. And when you look at the files, some of the things coming out, these are serious allegations. These are gross allegations. But it wouldn't change their vote. And to me, that raises a really big question.
Well, it goes beyond politics, though, then, at that point, doesn't it? It goes to not only individual character, but it goes to the character of the country. And I've railed against this whole my truth and your truth and Baba and everybody's own rules. There's no gray area in truth. Truth is truth, and right is right, and wrong is wrong. And some things are not open to negotiation, but we've lost that. We've taken the spirit of individualism, which America was founded on, and it's great, but we've taken that to an extreme where the right and wrong no longer exist. It's what I think is right and what you think is right. And those don't always match, and they're not always correct.
I think there's a pragmatism that goes with this too, right? Because morality in politics hasn't necessarily disappeared, but I think it's shifted and changed. And for a lot of people, it's no longer about that personal character. You don't need to be a good person. Right. Remember, when Bill Clinton had all of his scandals and even John F. Kennedy, it's become literally about loyalty, power, and winning culture wars. And that's what matters, I think, to a good majority of voters. And I think Donald Trump was able to bring that out and allow people to finally feel like they had a voice and a freedom in those. That's always been how I've seen it.
But if you look at that poll that you quoted, and when you hear people say, I don't care if someone is convicted of being part of a pedophilia ring, what's happened? We're lost.
We are.
And I don't know how we can get back.
I mean, if a pedophilia ring doesn't change minds, I don't know what does.
Nothing does.
It's 6:50.
Well, on that happy note, hey, it's Fat Tuesday.
It's 6:59. Go to your Poonchki. I implore you. 6:59 on Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We'll talk about the new SNAP benefits after the news.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.